church is in Africa, at the service of reconciliation, peace and justice.
The church is in Africa, at the service of reconciliation, peace and justice.
This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In this edition today, our bulletin of church news that will be followed by panorama and then our feature of justice and peace. Today we shall close with our sports roundup. My name is Kanyanda Godfrey Kampamba. Pope Francis has in a special way remembered the Emeritus Prefect of the Congregation for the Evangelization of Peoples, Cardinal Joseph Tomko, who passed away at the Vatican on Monday at the age of 98, Deborah Lubav reports.
In his telegram of condolences sent on Tuesday, the Pope remembered who he called an esteemed and wise brother. He praised the late Cardinal's deep faith and far-sighted gaze, his humble and self-sacrificing ways to serve the gospel and the church. I thank Pope Francis, continued, with gratitude of his long and fruitful work in the Holy See as a diligent and prudent collaborator of my predecessors. Created a cardinal in 1985 by Pope St. John Paul II, Cardinal Tomko passed away on Monday in his Rome apartment at age 98. Upon learning of the cardinal's passing, Pope Francis expressed his closeness to all close to the late cardinal. The Pope called Tomko an illustrious son of the nation and praised the late cardinal's deep faith, wisdom, and self-sacrifice. I also think of his prayerful spirit, the Pope said, remembering how Cardinal Tomko at an advanced age regularly could be found in St. Peter's Square praying the rosary, giving pilgrims and tourists a beautiful and public witness of love for the Blessed Mother. Pope Francis concluded praying that the Lord welcome his faithful servant and cordially imparting his blessing to all those who are mourning. The Pope offered special words of thanks also to the religious sisters who had cared for the late cardinal. Cardinal Tomko's funeral mass will be celebrated in St. Peter's Basilica on Thursday by the Dean of the College of Cardinals, Cardinal Giovanni Battista Re, and Pope Francis will offer the final valediction at the conclusion of the liturgy. I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.
9th August is the International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples. The day helps to raise awareness and protect the rights of the world's indigenous populations. The event also recognizes the achievements and contributions that indigenous people make to improve world issues such as environmental protection. Pope Francis observed the day by exhorting the faithful and all the people of goodwill to have the sense of family with everyone in the world. How precious is that profoundly genuine sense of family and community among indigenous peoples, wrote the Holy Father in his Twitter message on Tuesday, adding that it is important to cultivate properly the bond between young and old and to maintain a healthy and harmonious relationship with all of creation. The Vatican has underscored the importance of using atomic energy for peaceful purposes only. Making this statement was the Holy See's head of delegation to the United Nations, Archbishop Gabriel Kasha, when he addressed the 10th Review Conference of the Parties to the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons. The 1st to 26th August conference is taking place in the American city of New York. The Archbishop said that the Holy See takes this opportunity to reaffirm its commitment to the International Atomic Energy Agency and urges member states to strengthen support for the agency. He noted the contribution nuclear technology has made to sustainable development and cited the treatment of cancer, improving crop yields, managing and protecting water supplies, and monitoring ocean pollution. But he also pointed out the fact that despite these accomplishments, the spread of nuclear technology has not occurred without problems, some of which are very serious problems. Archbishop Kasha cautioned that ensuring the peaceful use of nuclear energy means that nuclear energy, medicine, and research facilities must not be targeted in war, which is said could turn such sites into sources of proliferation. He stressed the fact that if care is not taken, nuclear energy could be used to create dirty bombs, or it could radiologically contaminate local communities and the environment, thus harming present and future generations. Kenyans on Tuesday voted in crucial general elections to pick a new leader to replace outgoing President Uhuru Kenyatta. Members of parliament and county administrators, about 22 million Kenyans have registered to vote, the country's electoral body said, and polls opened from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m. local time. Analysts said the race is close, with neither of the leading candidates polling significantly higher than the other. If no candidate wins more than 50% of the vote, the election will go into a runoff for the first time in Kenyan history. Ahead of the elections, the Catholic bishops of Kenya called on all the Kenyans to maintain peace before, during and after the polls, and urged the citizens to turn out in large numbers to vote. Festus Darawali reports.
The chairman of the Kenya Conference of Catholic Bishops has renewed a call by the conference for Kenyans to maintain peace during and after Tuesday's general elections. Speaking at Holy Ghost Cathedral in Mombasa on Sunday, Archbishop Martin Kivuva Musonde also called on Kenyans to go out in large numbers on Tuesday to vote. Voting, he said, is not only a right, it also allows us to demand leadership and service delivery. We in this way contribute to making our country a better place by determining the qualities of our leaders, said Archbishop Kivuva. He went on to urge leaders to be measured in expressing their emotions of victory or defeat, and warned against making provocative utterances that will incite people. Continuing, the Archbishop urged Kenyans to be patient while waiting for the election results from the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, the IEBC. While parties have a right to run parallel tallying centres, we wish to remind all that the official tallying agency remains the IEBC, the Archbishop said. He also renewed an appeal by the bishops for young people to go out in large numbers and vote, and not to let anyone manipulate their choices. The Catholic Church in Kenya has been observing 3 days of special prayers for peaceful elections. I am Festus Tarawali.
A Catholic priest has died in the Democratic Republic of Congo from bullet wounds following an attack on a parish residence on Sunday. Local reports say the attackers had gone to steal from the Mukasa parish house, but ended up shooting the parish priest dead. Soon after the attack, Father Godefroy Pembele was rushed to Kinshasa for urgent medical treatment, but succumbed to the injuries sustained during the robbery. The Bishop of Kikwit, Monsignor Timothy Bodika, announced the death of his priest on Monday. On the same night, bandits also attacked the St. Matthias Murumba parish in the same diocese of Kikwiti, where they stole some valuables. Authorities in Kikwiti have complained of urban criminality that they say has become rampant in the area. You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
Voters in Kenya went to the polls on Tuesday to elect a president, members of parliament, governors, and local leaders. Three-quarters of Kenya's population are under the age of 35. 2 out of every 5 people who cast their votes on Tuesday were under the age of 35. One of the major campaign issues by the presidential and parliamentary candidates has been lack of formal employment for the youth. Many have no jobs at all, despite having university degrees or other qualifications. According to reports, voting was peaceful in most parts of the country, although there was voter intimidation near the border with Somalia, where Somali Al-Shabaab Islamic militants crossed into Kenya and prevented people from going to the polling stations. Outgoing President Uhuru Kenyatta assured the public after voting in his home village in Gatundu that polls would be free and fair. Full results of the polls are expected in 5 days. Reports from Ethiopia say the federal government has deployed hundreds of troops into Somalia's Gedo region to prevent Al-Shabaab Islamic militants from crossing into the country. The move follows attempts by the militants this month to infiltrate border areas and cause insecurity. A few days ago, Ethiopia launched a land attack and airstrikes inside Somalia, hitting several Al-Shabaab bases and killing about 800 militants, including 24 of their leaders. The deployed troops, according to eyewitnesses, are trying to establish a buffer zone inside Somalia to prevent further Al-Shabaab cross-border attacks. Al-Shabaab has been fighting the Somali government and the African Union peacekeepers since 2007. Nigeria has threatened to withdraw from the Regional Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, which represents 15 West African countries, because of what it said was an illegal recruitment policy. The threat was issued by the head of Nigeria's mission at the ECOWAS Parliament in Abuja, Innocent Odoo, who accused some ECOWAS principal officers of recruiting their relatives and cronies into key positions to serve the personal interests of the member states to the exclusion of Nigeria. You are tuned to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio. And now, our feature, Justice and Peace. In the last two editions, we have seen how the United Nations Capital Development Fund is helping people in parts of rural northern Uganda to develop by financing small projects like beekeeping for the production of honey and assisting small-scale farmers to embrace digital technology so that they can have access to the finances they need to invest in buying basic equipment, growing more crops, and selling more of their agricultural products. Power is very essential in the development of people. Unfortunately, northern Uganda is one of the areas of Uganda where majority of the people who live in rural areas have no access to electricity. Towns in the region, like Arua, that are connected to the grid, experience power cuts on a daily basis. The United Nations Capital Development Fund is supporting a company that is providing solar energy services to the people in Arua district. Colonel Lennon of the United Nations News Center has just returned from the area, and he filed the following report.
Around 789 million people lack any access to electricity. Most of them are in sub-Saharan Africa. The unreliability or non-existence of electricity for so many people worldwide is one of the reasons that some 2.4 billion people are still using inefficient and polluting cooking systems. Not only does this contribute to carbon emissions, but it also causes around 4 million deaths each year from the effects of smoke inhalation. And being connected to an electricity grid doesn't guarantee reliable power. This has a huge impact on businesses, health facilities, and government services, and is an obstacle to development. The UN believes that, in countries like Uganda, solar energy could be a big part in addressing that challenge. Dmitry Pozhadaev, the head of the UN Capital Development Fund's Uganda office, explains.
Access to electricity is still a challenge in Uganda. This, of course, has multiple implications on businesses, on persons, on government institutions, and so on and so forth. Ensuring access to solar is important in several respects. It provides additional opportunity for businesses, particularly micro and small, particularly in rural areas. It opens up an opportunity for some processing or some storage or some additional value-adding activity. It also allows them to extend their working hours because now they can work longer than just during daylight.
This is Mariam Ayikoro. She's a sales agent for Brightlife, a company bringing solar power to Arua in the West Nile district of northern Uganda.
Then account number is the serial number, of course. You want to put any serial number, yeah, 800.
She's come for a follow-up visit to meet Abasiku Aragajani, one of her clients in an Arua village.
Currently we're in Andelizwa. The area is called Andelizwa. We are here to visit the customers and then see how the systems have been installed and how the kids are using the lights for reading their books. The client has the TV system. He uses the TV for watching football and then other channels, and then he uses the light systems for the kids to read books and then also to provide light inside their house, and also they charge phones using the system. We do sales like home to home, shops, markets. That's where we get sales.
You know, Raya chose bright light. When it is fully charged up to 100%, you can even use it for 2 days. It doesn't go off. When even it is raining, like when it is raining, there is no sunshine, but the power still remains there. Because it stores power, even when there is no sunshine, but that power still remains there. They use it as a security light to protect me from thieves. Whenever they want to break in, when they get the light is on, the kids do watch videos and other movies. So it keeps the kids around. Because where they are sleeping, the room is separate from mine. If anything, I could provide them with the light there. So it acts as a source of security. It helps them because when they go to school, when they want to study, they enter in the room here, they use this light here to study.
Arua is in a region of Uganda with high poverty, which makes it a risky proposition for companies like Brightlife to attempt to sell their solar packages there. That's why the UN Capital Development Fund, or UNCDF, decided to provide Brightlife with the financial support that would allow them to expand into West Nile. Julius Magala is the Digital and Energy Finance Coordinator at the UNCDF Uganda office.
UNCDF has been funding a number of businesses aimed at increasing access to energy in underserved populations, including Arua. Brightlife is extending access to solar and cooking solutions to the people in West Nile, specifically in Arua and also Nebbi. Brightlife has been very instrumental in selling solar products for households, but also for productive use, energy-efficient cookstoves, reducing the amount of fuel that is used for cooking, lighting. They also provide the option for phone charging, and of course it comes with a radio or TV. So all these products can be bought on a pay-as-you-go, which means that customers can pay for the product in installment. They make an initial payment and then the balance is paid over a given period of time. And because of that model, that actually makes the product much more affordable to customers that wouldn't have afforded them. And since they started, they've been able to sell over 1,800 solar products in just a period of less than 2 years, given that we've also been in a very tricky COVID situation. It's quite popular. The products are working well. We have a lot of customers that are testifying that they're able to save. There is also improved indoor air pollution, and we're also seeing a lot of their customers also upgrading from one product to the other. So the customers that have started with just lighting and phone charging, and after time they're upgrading that to include radio and TV, that gives them at least more use for their solar system. There's quite a lot of benefits, actually with the solar system. I think one is really the reduction in costs. Typically, they're spending on batteries, they're spending on kerosene, and we've seen a reduction in terms of costs for batteries and also kerosene. So with the solar system, it reduces those expenses. The second benefit, especially with solar systems that provide, radio and also TV, is really access to the much-needed information, but also the ability for families that do have students to actually continue, studying at night.
Julius Magala from the UN Capital Development Fund. The UNCDF funding for Brightlife meant that they could employ Mariam Ayakoru, a young, ambitious woman who has big plans.
For myself, I have dreams. I'm a senior four student. I really have that dream of getting back to school, though I don't have the school fees. That's why I'm with the company to help myself gather that school fees that can help me get back to school and continue with my studies. So to me, the company is okay because I earn commissions daily. I make a sale today, I get paid the next day. That is what I save. About my job, I love it because I work with communities. I visit different people, different homesteads every day. I get to know people. I get to interact with them, and I find it so pleasing to work with the community because I learn a lot from them, like how to be social and that hospitality. Yeah, most of them are hospitable. They're so welcoming, and then they're social, they laugh, and they make friends. I really love that. I enjoy it so much. Yeah, to me, it is really a clean source of energy, that is to me, because you find the light, what they used to use before they bought the system, they use the ordinary lamps that can produce smoke, which is also not good for their health. So currently, there's no smoke in the house. You find they use the light systems. They normally have these batteries that are weak for charging phones. It is not so pleasing, but with the current light system, the TV system, they are able to charge phones. There are no smokes inside their houses. You find the system is really good.
Back in Abasiku Aragajani's village, his children are watching TV for entertainment right now, but as Mr. Magala says, they have much greater access to information. The children also have their school books out, and when it's time to do homework, the solar light installed in their room would allow them to carry on working when the sun goes down.
Con Lennon reporting. And with that, we come to the end of this week's edition of Justice and Peace. This has been Johnny Baptist Tumusime.
This is a sports roundup, and a welcome to the program. My name is Kenyatta Godfrey Kampamba. Nigeria's Esa Broom has won the women's long jump gold in a new Commonwealth Games record. Broom first won Commonwealth long jump gold at the Glasgow Games in 2014. She hopes a gold rush by Nigeria's women on the penultimate day of the Commonwealth Games will inspire girls in the country to take up sport. The 26-year-old reclaimed her long jump title on a day when Toby Amusan 100 meters hurdles gold, and they also triumphed in the women's 4x100 meter relay that took Nigeria's games tally to 12 gold medals, making them Africa's top performers in Birmingham in England. Three-time African champion Broom set a new games record with a leap of 7 meters to win, adding a second Commonwealth game to the one she claimed in Glasgow 8 years ago. Amusan set a new games record of 12.30 seconds to add the Commonwealth 100 meters hurdles title to her gold at the World Athletics Championships in Eugene. The 25-year-old then returned to help Nigeria to 4x100 meter relay victory alongside Favour Ofili, Rose Chukwuma, and Grace Nwokocha, who said the result was all the sweeter after they finished fourth in Oregon last month. Elsewhere at the Alexander Stadium on the 10th of the games, Kenya had track triumphs as Wycliffe Kinyamal won the men's 800 meters, while Beatrice Chebet took the women's 5,000 meters title as compatriot Sela Buzenei came third. Zambia's Muzala Samukonga won the men's 400 meters in a personal best of 44.66 seconds. This year's Commonwealth Games ended on Monday evening. Sebastian Desabre has been appointed as the new coach of the Democratic Republic of Congo after the Frenchman ended his contract at Chamois Niortais. The 46-year-old succeeds Argentine Hector Cooper, who was sacked in June after the Leopards lost their first two qualifiers for the 2023 Africa Cup of Nations. Chamois Niortais has threatened legal action after Desabre was named as the Democratic Republic of Congo coach on Saturday, with the club saying it had never been in contact with the Central African Countries Football Federation. But the French League 2 outfit announced it had agreed to terminate Desabre's contract on Sunday. Desabre has previously managed club sides in Ivory Coast, Cameroon, Tunisia, Algeria, Morocco and Egypt, and spent 18 months in charge of Uganda, including managing the Cranes at the 2019 Nations Cup. Democratic Republic of Congo will not play another competitive game until March next year, after September's 2023 Nations Cup qualifiers were scheduled. The Confederation of African Football is appalled by what it calls as the irresponsible and unacceptable remarks made by Napoli president Aurelio De Laurentiis on African players and the African Cup of Nations by publicly declaring that players who signed for Napoli must sign a waiver denouncing participation in the Africa Cup of Nations as a condition of employment. De Laurentiis' comments are likely to fall under Article 14 of the UEFA disciplinary regulations. CAF therefore urges UEFA to initiate disciplinary investigations against him. The Confederation of African Football is committed to the role that football played in Africa, Europe, North and South America, Asia and globally of bringing together and uniting people of different cultures, language groups, races, ethnic groups and religious backgrounds. We have no doubt that Napoli and UEFA are as committed as CAF is to these global humanitarian objectives. The African Cup of Nations is the flagship competition of the African continent and one of the leading global football competitions. Its last edition in Cameroon was shown in more than 160 countries and attracted more than 600 million viewers. And on that note, we come to today's edition of our Sports Roundup. Until next week at the same time, my name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. This is the Africa Service of Vatican Radio and I am Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.